I go to a church of about 300 people and has the one Sunday morning service.
My church is medium-sized. It's big enough to have a lot of activities to choose from, but small enough to know quite a few people there.
My church is some 8,000 to 12,000. There's Saturday night, Friday night for college age, three services on Sunday, 600 cell groups, goes on and on.
My wife and I just recently started attending a very tiny church, small for us anyway. There's about 40 adults and a handful of children. And some Sundays you wonder, are they going to be there the next Sunday? Will there be enough people to sustain the church?
Well, unfortunately, church size in America today has become some sort of status symbol, as if Sunday's attendance has something to do with your IQ level or natural charm or even how successful you are in God's eyes. But nothing could be further from the truth. I'm Chris Fabry. Welcome to our second segment of Pastor to Pastor, where we're exploring what the healthy church is really supposed to look like. Our host, as always, is Reverend H.B. Lennon, Jr.
Chris, I just know that there's a lot of buzz going on right now because I imagine that there's some folks listening to us today that think we're ragging on mega churches, and we're really not. I'm sure that every pastor listening would love to have one and probably think they have the ability to pastor one. But the mega church really does get all the headlines,
sure,
good and bad. And the irony is that they represent only a small fraction of the churches in this country, and especially around the world. So that's why we wanted to make sure that this edition of Pastor to Pastor included a couple of average guys who may never preach before a congregation of thousands, or even maybe write a best-selling book about their ministry, or be recognized as one of the top pastors in America, like recently the magazines in America featured the top 50 guys or whatever. But our next two guests are men who are simply being faithful to God's calling right where they are. And they've learned to leave the numbers and other external measures of the success to the Lord. And that's really the best place to put it.
Reverend Randy Papineau has been in full-time ministry with his wife for more than 25 years. In 2001, Randy left the security of 17 years at a fairly successful church of more than 1,000 members to plant another ministry in the Briargate area of Colorado Springs, Colorado. And here's how our host recently greeted him in the studio.
Hey, Randy, it's a delight to have you with us on this edition of Pastor to Pastor, as we talk about the healthy church. I know that in your quite a few years in ministry, you've been youth pastor, you've been chief bottle washer, you've been executive pastor, you've been all kinds of things. And then in January of 2001, you and your wife decided that you would plant a church.
Yes, that's correct.
Just kind of in spitting distance of a focus on the family here in Colorado Springs.
Yeah, we're just located three blocks north of you.
Yeah. And you're surrounded here by a lot of great big churches, and I guess mega churches they'd be known as, but also in our community, just so that those listening to us can get a perspective, there's probably 400 churches in the Colorado Springs area as well, and you happen to be one of them. You know, one of the things that I've said to a lot of folks who ask about Colorado Springs and the fact that it's kind of a mecca for parachurch ministries and all, that only about 27% of the people in Colorado Springs go to church on a Sunday basis, and that's probably lower than the national average. So talk to us about how you got started and why it was that you even wanted to plant a church right here in the midst of Mecca and all these major churches.
Well, I've lived in Colorado Springs since 1983, and so we served for 17 years on staff at a local Assemblies of God Church, Radiant Church. And when there was a pastoral transition, the new pastor coming in came to me one day and just spoke with me about the idea of being part of pastoring a church that would be mothered by Radiant.
I see.
So we took a few months, prayed about it, wanted to make sure that motives were right on both ends of the spectrum. And when we felt a signal from God that this was a thing that we ought to do, we've just pursued it, and we've come right into this north end of Colorado Springs where there's some really incredible churches. I mean, we're just a couple miles away from some of the largest churches. In fact, the largest church in the state of Colorado is less than a mile from us.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you started this church in January of 2001, and now you've grown to nearly 200 members or whatever, which is bigger than most churches. The average church has about 90 in it on a given Sunday morning, 100,000 less than 50. So it's not like you're a small church, but what's the greatest challenge you face in a church that has been birthed and has moved up to this near 200 member plateau?
Well, HB, in our circumstance, I believe the greatest challenge that I faced was there were 100 people that agreed to come with us to plant this new church. And so we took 6 months to just work with those 100 people and define what our church was going to be. And the challenge was really significant in the sense that many of them had preconceived ideas of what this new church ought to be. Namely, many of them thought that it should look very much like the mother church. And I knew that what God had called me to was going to be something that was going to look very different than the mother church. And so the biggest challenge I faced was just simply working with those individuals, helping them to understand that we had a very clear vision that was very different from the mother church.
And so those 100 people came, you worked with them for 6 months, you had a idea of what you wanted to be. You didn't want to be a stepchild in any way. You wanted to be your own entity, but they helped support you financially. And I hear a lot of pastors around the country talking about attrition. So those 100 people that came with you, naturally, probably some of them went back to the mother church, I would imagine.
Well, interesting enough, I went to 3 different conferences on planting churches. Uh-huh. And just before planning the church, to just really learn all that I could. And it was pretty consistent that 90% of people that come with you in a church plant from a mother church will stay with you for 1 year, and then you can count on them being gone. And our situation was a little bit different. We retained 90% in that first year. Yeah. And so I think once that 90% really caught the vision for who we were going to be, and once they embraced it, then the majority have stayed. Well, and when I say the majority, we probably today have retained about 50% of that original 100.
But that's a great average, and it's way above the average. Now, you left a radiant church, a going church, all the bells and whistles, and a lot of people, a lot of music talent, a lot of staff, big parking lots, had all those kind of things.
And yes.
You had to move to a school, because I remember preaching for you one Sunday in a school, and then now you've purchased your own facility, which is a great thing. But leaving that mother church, I mean, you had to probably learn to do bulletins and everything again. You had all this stuff going. You had everything handed to you while you were there, but then you moved away from that,
and there
was a whole different animal, wasn't it?
Definitely a paradigm shift taking place, going from the large church. Radiant was running a little over 1,300 people at the time that we left, to planting a church of 100. And I've always wanted to pitch in and just be a part, even when on staff at Radiant, of helping with projects and so forth, but all of that responsibility rested on my shoulders starting the new church.
The buck really does stop with
the
pastor.
Yes.
Now, help me understand this. How about your self-image? You were part of this big church, and you probably went around town and in restaurants. You saw people you knew, and they knew you. Hi, Pastor Randy, all that kind of thing. Then you moved to a smaller church, kind of under the shadow of this mega church. And right back, actually, you were a church plant sandwich, because you were sandwiched between 2 or 3 mega churches. What did that do? I mean, did it give you kind of a I'll show them attitude, or was it a humble attitude, or did you realize that but by the grace of God, there's no way you were going to make it?
Well, I did not go into this with any preconceived ideas that I'm going to show anyone anything. It was certainly with humility and a great amount of fear that I approached senior pastoring, especially in a church plant. But the nice thing about just staying in the same community is I still go into restaurants and I still see some of the same people.
Okay,
and So, you know, there's walk into a mall, and it's just nice to be able to see a lot of people that I know and greet them. And even though they're not part of our church, there still is a relationship there.
Do they seem interested in what you're doing?
Absolutely.
I mean, they have out of sight, out of mind. They haven't forgotten.
Well, maybe for some, but I would say for most part, there is a general respect that people have for ministers that will be willing to just go out and plant something new.
Yeah. What I've heard, too, from pastors and from my own experience, when I was a young pastor kind of growing up in the ministry, you know, we really did live in a fishbowl. Then I got to a little bigger situation, and it was easier for Beverly and the kids to kind of get lost. And then we got to a big, big situation, and they could just, they could almost be anonymous if they wanted to.
Yes.
Some people didn't even know who my kids were. Well, I'm sure at Radiant, that was kind of the way it was with your family. If they wanted to be kind of in the background, they could be. But now you moved to a smaller situation. Did you move into the fishbowl then?
No, actually, we haven't. And I believe it's just through some of the helps that we've had in ministry of just really learning how to respect our children and how we treat our church to our children. Our children love being a part of Church of Briargate.
Yeah.
And they don't feel put on the spot. They don't feel the pressures that many pastors' kids do feel. They feel really honored, just the term PK for pastors' kids. My kids are blessed that our district puts on a PK retreat. And so they feel like there's just a lot of fringe benefits being the pastor's kids.
Yeah. So how did you develop that in your spouse and in your children to kind of love the church? Because there's so many pastors' kids, especially in the smaller church, that they almost resent their parents because they have to be a part of that church. How did you build that in them?
Well, I think early on in ministry, when our oldest son, Ryan, when he was in the preschool ages of his life, I really began to just recognize the value of how we treat church to him. And so consequently, by just reading good materials, and I know this isn't a commercial for Focus's bookstore, but you guys are a great resource in your bookstore here at Focus on the Family. Really just proved to be very valuable to my family and I. And so as we raised our kids, we just helped them to see the good. We were really careful, my wife and I, of not taking home some of the negative qualities that happen in church front of our kids.
So you didn't just sit around the dinner table and talk about the joy suckers and those people that...
No, not at all. Yeah. Not at all. We would just really talk about the positive things to our children. And so consequently, you know, we have three teenage kids that... in their own way, each one of them are hoping to pursue ministry.
Yeah. A lot of people, Randy, a lot of pastors say, man, if I got this church of 100, 200, 300, if I just had a church of 1,000, man, I could really make a difference in this world. And God has created me to be part of a church of 1,000. But there are challenges each way. Now, you were in a large church situation, and you had ministry, and you had the ups and downs of that. But when you go from a large situation to a smaller situation, how does your ministry change? Do you become more pastoral, or how does that work?
Well, I know for me, one of the things that I was really grateful that the Lord just really worked with me. He prepared me for this role of senior pastor, and he prepared me several years before starting Church of Briargate. And so I remember when he birthed in my heart the thought of pastoring a church, that I knew that there were some shortcomings that I had that I just really need to be shored up in order to be an effective pastor. Namely, compassion was probably the one area. And I don't mean this in any way derogatory, being serving on a larger staff, but they were not in need of my compassion. There were plenty of compassionate ministries. Mm-hmm. And so when I knew that I was going to become a senior pastor, I ended up taking the Taylor Johnson personality test, and it confirmed that I was a well-rounded man with low compassion.
And it told you what you knew, right?
It told me what I knew. And so I just prayed that the Lord would really just help me to have a heart of compassion. And so what I have seen just in these short years is how I feel like the Lord has almost gone overboard in this area. I feel like just the compassion that I have for people when they're in, whether it's a financially difficult situation or whether they're in the hospital, my heart genuinely just goes out for people.
And people would say, as they said it to me all those years, you're going to spoil your people, you're going to make it difficult for another pastor to follow you and all those kind of things. And I would say, don't try to make me into something I'm not. I want to be a servant. I want to be a shepherd. I want to be there with my people. And many times they would laugh at me. But I would imagine your people sense that love you have for them. They understand what they mean to you because of your attention.
I believe they do, HB. I really do. There is a genuine, a deep love and a respect that is mutual.
Does it ever bother you because you got 200 or 300 people and the church up the street has 8,000? Do you ever feel intimidated by that and like you're not making any difference and you're not successful?
No, not in the least bit, because New Life Church, which is just right up the road from us, wonderful church. And I have the greatest respect for Pastor Ted Haggard and the ministry that they're doing. Oftentimes we see people that come into our church, and I have a few pastor friends that would say the exact same thing, that their smaller churches are fed by New Life and some of the larger churches in town. And so there is no sense of threat. I know it wasn't too long ago we were at Macaroni Grill on a Sunday, and my wife and I, we ran into Ted Haggard and his wife. And my wife, Joan, just said to Pastor Ted, Pastor Ted, we're planning on putting a sign out in the front of our church that says New Life South Entrance.
That's cool.
And so there really is just this great respect that we have for the large church.
So if you can't always measure success by numbers and by the kind of cars in the parking lot or the offerings or the way the sanctuary looks, if you can't measure success that way, how do you pastors who serve in congregations that are growing and maturing and evolving, how do you measure success?
HB, on that particular question, I look at the simple component of effectiveness. And I ask myself, Lord, are we being effective here? And we are currently putting a structure in place in our church after a little more than 4 years of ministry, of really just measuring the effectiveness of areas. And some of that effectiveness deals with me personally. You know, it's not just a matter of saying, you know, okay, we're going to look at all the perimeter ministries that, you know, that my hands don't touch, but I'm wanting to look at what I'm doing and just saying, you know, is it effective? Could it be more effective?
And so to be a healthy church, my contention has always been that it's not church size, it's not church growth, but it's church health. And a lot of guys will hear me in conferences saying that, and they say, well, HB, that's a cop-out, because it's really all about the number of seats in the pew, so to speak. And I say, no, I come back to the fact that every church has its own personality and its own uniqueness. And if they're achieving those things, then they can be a healthy church without having to compete with anybody.
Yeah, absolutely. I do not see us in competition with anyone. And I personally tend to be very competitive, and I have a twin brother. And so we are very competitive. Yeah. And my twin brother is a pastor.
Oh, wow.
And he pastors a church that's twice the size of ours. Yeah. And so instead of me feeling like, you know, he's being more successful than I am, you know, I don't look at that. I learn from him. He learns from me. And I think that it's very healthy.
When your church is unhealthy, or like when your church gets the flu, so to speak, and you got the aches and the pains and whatever.
It does happen.
Yeah, I know it does. And so when your church gets the flu and it's got the aches and pains, what generally creates that? Have you ever thought about that?
Well, I think for me, I just have to come back to the very core of what our church is about. And I felt like, you know, for planting church at Briargate, God gave me a very specific vision, and that it was to help cultivate and develop spiritual disciplines in the lives of people. Yeah. And so when the church is suffering, oftentimes I have to come back just to that component. Are we focusing on areas that, are we majoring in minors? Are we just focusing on things that we're not supposed to be focusing on?
You know what I found when our church got the flu is that we got away from our passion. It was kind of like a ball player who couldn't dunk a basketball, but we were always trying to dunk it rather than passing off or doing what we do best. And we were trying to be something that we weren't. And also, when our church got the flu, is usually because I've found myself not in prayer and study and concentrating on what God had called me to. I found myself messing around with the periphery, running around speaking or doing these kind of things. And I got off my game as well.
Yeah, and I do find that even in the small church, it is easy enough to become distracted and start paying attention to the things that really are insignificant. And maybe not insignificant, but maybe it's something that someone else in the body of Christ is supposed to be paying attention to.
Yeah.
And so I do like to just come back to prayer and that kind of the central focus of what God has called us to do. And
there's a great book that's probably out of print, but it was called The Walk on the Water Syndrome. I don't know if you have it in your library or not, but it really made the assertion that there's only one guy who walked on water. One guy tried and got water up his nose, and the rest of us stood on a boat and said, you know, maybe I better not try that.
Yes.
So, you know, the walk on the water syndrome is something that a lot of pastors feel like they can do, but they get into it and find that there's casualty there. I'm sitting across from you, and I'm pastoring a church of 125, and I've got power brokers in my church, and the same people kind of sit in the pew every Sunday in the same place, and I could probably close my eye and draw a picture of what the sanctuary looks like on Sunday morning and not miss very many people. How do you encourage me in my significance when I'm feeling insignificant and like I'm not making any difference? How do you encourage me?
Yeah, I feel that it is just so important to just stay true to what God has called you to do. Because when a person will just concentrate on their giftedness, their abilities, and when I look at the fact that, you know, there may be this last Sunday, you know, 175 people in church, I recognize that those 175 people are probably not going to ever end up in a mega church. Yeah. And so, you know, there's a specific call that the smaller church has, and it has an incredibly vital place in the kingdom of God today. And so I would just encourage pastors of churches less than a couple hundred to just stay true to yourself. And if God's given a specific calling, just to go back and renew yourself to that calling.
Would it have been something if Jesus had gauged his ministry by the number of people and said, okay, now I'm not going to start the healing service until we have 1,000 people here until everybody gets out of the river. We're not going to do any baptism because I want the whole river by myself. I mean, that's
yes.
So uncharacteristic. But the point is the 175 people are the 3,050 people as they sit in the sanctuary. The one thing they need is something that's going to touch their lives that they can cope with and deal with the challenges of whatever the next week brings.
Well, and I look at the simple fact that when you even just give a comparison of numbers of whether it's 3,500 or 175, you know, each one individually is important to Jesus Christ. And so whether there's a mass or a small group, I believe that there is just some real genuine, authentic ministry that needs to take place. And honestly, I do not think that a pastor of a church that has been a couple hundred for decades needs to look at that in a critical way. I say, look at your giftedness and recognize that that's probably what God has called you to do,
yeah,
is just to shepherd.
You know, Pastor Randy, I used to preach to the fringe. I would kind of look around the sanctuary and envision this guy or this lady or this family on the fringe.
Mm.
And if I didn't say something that kind of drew them in to the body that Sunday to think that they could leave and never come back, or I might never even know that they're gone, or nobody might even miss them, and to think what they would miss if the fact we didn't draw them in. And I just would affirm pastors out there to think about the fringe, not just your second, third, because nobody sits on the front row in a small church, but because you got to keep the Kleenex boxes there and the
yes.
old hymnals and stuff. But not just to think of the people that are always in those pews, but the people that might come in and not even know where to sit.
Yeah, and I feel that it is incredibly important that you know, as you're trying to draw people in and to get them assimilated into the body of Christ, that you know, that there be some kind of a structure to find the giftedness that people have,
yeah,
so that indeed they can be included in the body. Because what I've learned in our church, and I feel that our church right now is just very healthy. some very good spiritual things taking place. But probably the most interesting component of this right now is that we have a large percentage of our people that are engaged in ministry.
Yeah, that's a key. What happens when a family comes in to see you and you see them come and say, oh, no, I know what this is about? They say, Pastor Randy, we really, really love you. It's really nothing about you, but the youth department just isn't what we want, or we don't like the music very well. And I know we've been coming here a couple of years, and you've been awfully nice to us, but we're going to the big church up on a hill.
You know, I don't think that is any different for a pastor of a small church and a pastor of a large church, because I remember sitting in a staff meeting at Radiant Church one day when the church was about 1,000 at that time, and I remember learning of a family that that was leaving. And as that was articulated in that particular staff meeting, I watched my senior pastor just weep.
Yeah.
And as a pastor of a church of 175, 200 people, you know, when I hear of people leaving, it breaks my heart. And, you know, it's not a matter of, well, you know, the little church needs them more. The big church doesn't miss them as much. Honestly, I mean, people matter, and they matter to Christ. They have to matter to us. And so I don't know what pastor doesn't take that segment personal.
But you know a lot of your friends in the Assemblies of God, or even in this huge community that you and I live in, of so many churches and all the things that go on here. Bivocational, the spouses have to work. Maybe they have to work one or two jobs. They have limited benefits,
yes.
Social Security and hospitalization. Mm-hmm. You know, they got those challenges that sometimes can be destructive to ministry because it gets your mind off the most important thing.
Well, I think that Satan's most effective tool is just distracting. And I believe that when a minister is distracted by salary, health benefits, and just all of the things that go with just kind of living a, or maybe what we would call a normal life, it really sets a pastor back. And so I think I meet with four or five pastors on a monthly basis just from this north end of Colorado Springs. And it's just kind of interesting because this is topic of discussion on a monthly basis, you know. I mean, there's just some
church. So you talk about finances,
yes.
You talk about remuneration, you
yes.
talk about, man, I may have to get another job, all those things.
Yes. And, you know, here again, I think for the pastor that'll just stay committed, I've been blessed that I don't have to take a second job, but I've watched some of my pastor friends do it with great success.
Yeah.
And I just say, God bless them for it.
That has to do with grace, doesn't it? I'm not sure that all of us have that kind of same grace giftedness to do that. I think you as a church planner are unique. I think guys that pastor small churches throughout their lives are unique. I think their spouses are unique, that they're able to deal with that year after year after year. You've been at your assignment for nearly 4 years at church at Briargate in Colorado Springs. The average length of time is 3 to 5 years. During that 4 years, have you ever down deep in your heart said, you know, I don't know if this is right for me. Maybe I've paid my dues. I probably should be going somewhere else. Or did you make a commitment for a certain time?
I sometimes feel like that on Monday mornings. But I think that I have just recognized by serving the 17 years on one staff, I learned the value of longevity.
Yeah.
And so even though, you know, I'm approaching the fifth year of ministry at Church at Briargate, I'm really recognizing that that longevity is beginning to pay dividends.
Yeah,
just recently, you know, I had to make a major decision in which I just needed to go to my church board and just say, I need you to trust me on this one. And it was one that, because there was that relationship that I could not have done it in the first year of ministry.
Okay, you alluded to the question that I really want to talk about. The operation of a large church where you've got a large staff and the senior pastor is the visionary and you got staff members to carry out that vision. When you get into a smaller situation, and whether you call them deacons or elders or trustees or board members, whatever it is you call
yes.
them, in a sense, they've got to be the implicators in some way. They've got to be the ones that really put feet to the vision and dreams that you as a pastor have.
Well, I'm a firm believer that that the pastor needs to be the one casting the vision. Yeah. And when the pastor casts the vision, you know, sometimes that's not an easy sell for board of directors, board of deacons. And but here again, this is one of the things where I had the privilege of working with the board that I had known most of them for many years. And so, you know, for them, there's that trust level that comes with longevity.
Yeah. They say in Colorado Springs, I think they did a survey, you know, some months ago, you may have been included in it, that though we have nearly 500 churches in El Paso County here, which is a lot of churches, that that we are below the national average here for church attendance, that only about 27% of our community would go to church on the average Sunday. Now, I know we're a military community, and you have a lot, and we're in many ways a destination point for people who are on vacations and that kind of thing. But here in Colorado Springs, there almost seems to be an us against them mentality.
Yes.
You know, we at Focus on the Family receive lots and lots of bad press in the newspaper and on the radio and television, that kind of thing. What's it like pastoring in a community with so many churches and so many parachurch organizations and Pikes Peak in the background, and you go every place you go and people would say, man, that's a town I want to live in someday?
Yeah, I've watched this over the 20-some years that I've lived here, how people want to come to Colorado Springs and plant a church and just kind of watch the dream kind of go by the wayside. You know, few have done it and done it very successfully. But I find it very interesting, especially with the number of parachurch organizations. Do you know how many parachurch organizations?
Nearly 100
parachurch organizations here.
They come and go too, but
they do, and yeah. It creates an interesting dynamic in the community, because I know that we're known as kind of like the Wheaton of the West and this real Christian community, but yet I honestly believe that there are many God-fearing believers that find themselves in the parachurch organizations that really allow that parachurch organization to meet their spiritual needs instead of the local church.
One of our colleagues lost someone very dear to them recently. And when I talked to them on the phone and said, now, is your church supporting you in this? They said, you know, we don't even have a church.
Mm.
And they've been a part of a parachurch ministry for years and years.
Well, that doesn't surprise me, because I think that, and here again, I have the utmost respect and appreciation for what the parachurch organization has done for our community. Mm-hmm. It really is a gift to Colorado Springs. When you see people that basically have all of their needs met that that would normally be met in a small group, oftentimes that happens in a parachurch organization. Yeah. And so there's devotion, Bible study, and you're in a Christian organization. And so I think, at least from that one component, there tends to be less of a need for getting plugged in to a local church.
Yeah. Now, last question. It deals with your family and your spouse, and you alluded to your children not long ago. I'm sure the demands upon you in a smaller church are unique in that people know your number and they know where you live and they know how to get a hold of your email and all this kind of thing. And because you don't have this mammoth staff, you got dedicated laymen and you do have a staff, but you don't have this mammoth staff. So that puts a little more pressure upon you. How about how you and your beautiful bride, how do you relate and how do you balance, and how's it different than the bigger church?
Well, I take Mondays as my day off, and so that's a given, pretty much. And so I really work to protect my day off. Saturdays are sometimes it's a day off, and sometimes it's not. And so, I mean, if there's something church related, it's not. There's never a chance to make that up. Yeah. I mean, just that's
just part of
part of the job. And so by just honoring that over the years, it's been something where just by having that consistent one day a week is really does provide a very good, healthy break. And so, you know, just able to do things, especially in the summertime with the family, we're able to do things. And Mondays, most people are at work. So, you know, there's short lines and a few people out doing the things that we want to be doing. Yeah. So,
now how about, are you the kind of guy that goes home if you're burdened and heavy laden? Are you the kind of guy that goes home and just spills your guts to your wife? I mean, or do you hold some of this stuff in, or do you go call your brothers? I mean, how do you deal with the challenges and the disappointments? How do you deal with that?
I really do have a great relationship with my wife, and a very godly wife. And so oftentimes I'm able to just kind of talk with her and just share some of the personal frustrations. She oftentimes has some very good godly counsel. And then I do have that other component with my family that I'm able to. I remember just recently I had a situation that just really, really burned me, and in which a person said something to me very inappropriate. And my response was unfortunately probably less than what you would hope for in a senior pastor. But I didn't say anything that I shouldn't have said, but there was just this real sense of feeling beat up, feeling kicked when I was down. And I tell you, it was a real comfort to be able to talk with my brothers and my wife, and just to explain, to vent.
But you would agree with me, Pastor Randy, that everybody needs somebody.
Yes.
That they can share with, and not just be the dumpee, but the dumper and all these kind of things. But,
absolutely. But I think for a pastor to at least have another pastor friend that can understand, I think it's dangerous if that person is someone in your congregation. But personally, I feel that way. I think you need to be able to dump with someone that it's safe.
Yeah. Okay. Now, you're like Paul before Felix now, and you've almost convinced him. So there's a bunch of guys sitting out there right now listening to us, and they've got a small church or medium-sized church or whatever, and they've been all frustrated because it's not growing the way it should, and they've got a power boss in the church that's creating havoc for them, and they're wondering if it's all worth it. Tell me why it's worth it.
Oh, I tell you, there's nothing more fulfilling in ministry than for me to be able to just witness people where you can see the growth.
Yeah.
And when I see it happening, I think of a young couple who nearly lost their little son in an accident, who just barely came to church once every other month we may see them. But to just see that situation just cause them to look at their own spiritual lives and know that they could come to the church. And now, through the test of time, we've watched this family just become so plugged into church and just growing in a relationship with God. There's nothing in life that is more fulfilling than pastoral ministry.
And to see transformation, right?
Absolutely.
See people move from one level to the next.
Yes.
Pastor Randy, thanks for being with us on this edition of Pastor to Pastor. I just imagine that God's going to use you in ways that you can't even imagine.
And thank you, HB.
It's going to be interesting just to kind of hang around and watch it happen.
I receive that from you.
God bless you.
God bless you.
Reverend Randy Papineau, who pastors church at Briargate in Colorado Springs, Colorado. I'm Chris Fabry. Our host is Reverend H.B. London, Jr., and Reverend Papineau shared a wonderful story about the transformational power of the church to help people in need. But who can perform that same service for the pastoral family, particularly in a smaller community where everybody knows your name and is likely to know more about your family's issues than you like? Focus on the Family's Pastoral Ministries is here to help. And we'd like to say every Moses needs his Aaron to help you hold up when your ministry becomes tiring, to refresh you with encouragement and prayer, and to help you win the battle. We can help in a variety of ways. First, I want to encourage you to check out our website at parsonage.org. This site was specifically designed with you, pastors, in mind. And if you'd like to talk with a confidential pastoral counselor about a family problem, if you could use a referral for counseling or refreshment, or you simply need a listening ear, I urge you to call our pastoral care line at 1-877-233-4455. This is a free service for pastors and their family members. Coming up on Pastor to Pastor, we'll hear from a former pastor who served in rural communities for more than 10 years and truly believes there are no little places. Join H.B. London and myself for more on our next segment.